not corporations. Rick Smith. We're talking about the China Grove. Whoa, whoa.
China Grove. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So all week we've been talking about the tariffs. We've been talking about China. And really, really very productive conversations, you know, especially, you know, the stuff that I've been getting, you know, the emails, the direct messages, you know, all of the conversation back and forth about, you know, one, we don't like Trump. And that's a given. I get that. But on this issue, you know, the blind squirrel, as I've been saying, has found a nut. It's something that the working class of this country had better come around to. The idea that we need fair and sane and rational and sane trade policy, not new, however, something I've been talking about every day for the 14 years I've been doing this program. But, you know, now we've got a president who's going to use them. Is he going to use them right? Probably not. Is he going to booger this up? Most likely. But we've got to do something. And I think now is the time, and here to share some thoughts on maybe what we should be doing if tariffs aren't the answer. That's why I've asked Dan Maurer to come talk with us. Dan's a legislative representative with the Communication Workers of America, CWA. Dan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I look at this, and look, I've taken a lot of flack for supporting the idea that, you know, we should, and I don't know if it's that I'm in favor of tariffs or if it's something that Trump has done that has caught the ire of people. But I've been taking a lot of shots from people going, you know, how dare you support him? Look, workers in this country have been getting just pummeled for at least 20 years now. Something's got to be done, and I'm hopefully sooner as opposed to later.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Because the thing is, you know, even for folks, you know, there's folks all across the country, manufacturing. You know, CWA's biggest membership is in call centers, and even call centers are being offshored now too. And people are seeing. Where people are, companies are just going anywhere where they can make their goods with paying people no money, paying no taxes, and polluting the bejesus out of the environment. So even if you haven't had your job offshore, you know, anybody whose job is offshorable has seen, well, they asked for a better contract, a better retirement. If they tried to organize a union at a non-union shop, they've always seen this threat. Well, you know what? If you want a better life, we're going to just uproot your whole life and move jobs overseas. And so it's a huge problem, and it definitely needs to be addressed. And I think we need a president to be tough. You're right about that. I agree 100%. We just need to make sure that we're tough in the right way, because if we're not, we don't want to end up doing something that ends up focusing our ire in the wrong direction.
Good point. No, I mean, I look at NAFTA 2.0 or Trump's NAFTA. I don't see a lot there that's going to make the lives of working people in this country much better. I give a little bit of credit for trying to push the idea that workers should have the right to organize and collectively bargain in Mexico. Maybe it's something we should be really pushing here at home before we preach it abroad. But, you know, other than that, not much in my view there. A lot of protections for corporations, a lot of protections for the moneyed interest, but not so much for, well, the people who actually create the wealth, the people, the workers.
You know, I think that's right. I think they've had some good ideas. There's some good people in the U.S. Trade Representative's office who want to do the right thing. But money still talks, especially in the Trump administration. And what you ended up seeing at the end was that the process got hijacked by the pharma industry in particular, that locked in these really, really aggressive protections for their monopolies that keep generics off the market. And, you know, that would be just horrible if that gets implemented as it is. On the other hand, you know, you've got these provisions for collective bargaining in Mexico. Unfortunately, what you don't have is a real enforcement process. You know, we've had a theoretical enforcement process in all our FTAs for 15 plus years to enforce labor rights and environmental rights. And if you can't remember why any of those cases, that's because there haven't been not a single solitary case that we've won on labor rights or environmental rights. And in fact, the process that they use to enforce them in this new NAFTA 2.0 is actually a step back from most of those agreements. So it's, if you really want to have a real improvement, you know, we've got to level the playing field by making sure that Mexican workers and workers in the United States can both exercise our right to bargain, and that'll lift their wages, that'll lift our wages, that'll stop this race to the bottom.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Unfortunately.
Right, but here's the thing, Dan, and I don't mean to cut you off, but you know when I say that, and I've said that a number of times, I have people say, well, then that means the cost of my goods are going to be much more expensive. The consumers are going to have to pay for all of that, and it's bad for consumers. And I tell you, I am so tired of hearing this consumer-centric rhetoric. Because ultimately, we're workers before we're consumers, so we should probably, you know, be worrying about what's in our paycheck first.
I think that's exactly right, and I think, you know, that you'll often hear, it's interesting that those same people, when they're looking out for consumers, are the same people who don't want to do anything about the payday loan industry that's charging people interest rates of 700%. They're the same people that want to let Wall Street rip you off left and right, the same people that want to let pharmaceutical companies jack up the prices of drugs by 40% a year. It's the same, you know, they're not consistent on that. That's just an excuse for the people who want companies to be able to keep on paying low wages and taking advantage of workers.
Yeah, I'm with you. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Dan Maurer. Dan's a legislative representative with the Communication Workers of America, CWA. You know, the thing that I keep getting thrown back at, you know, tariffs are bad. You know, we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs in our education system to think that, you know, tariffs are horrible. They're just terrible. And look, I'm not saying they're great, but at some point when you're at the end of the road, which I think we are with China, you look at our growing these massive trade deficits we've been having year after year, record year after record year after record year. And at some point, you've got to do something because, and I keep hearing people say, well, you know what we need to do is we need to negotiate and get them on this or get them to do this or that or labor rights or any of this. You go, but how do you do that when they've proven time and time again that they're not? They're going to lie, cheat, and steal. That's what they've built their manufacturing power on. And they're not going to negotiate in good faith. So if the only thing you have left is to withhold access to your market or tax the hell out of them, that's kind of where we're at, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. Tariffs are a necessary enforcement tool. That's what they are. They're an enforcement tool. They're not a policy you want to have forever. That doesn't do that. But you want to, if you're gonna stop companies and countries from abusing the rules, you need to have an enforcement system, and that's what tariffs are there to do. I think the problem that I've seen with this China discussion is, what are they using those tariffs for? It looks like their main goal is to protect companies' intellectual property rights. Well, you know, I'll be honest. If Boeing and Apple are moving jobs to China and they want to make sure that their intellectual property is protected while they're doing that, I got to tell you, I don't have a lot of sympathy for them.
I don't either.
What I think we should be doing is if they want their intellectual property protected, I've got a great country in mind that they could build their factories in and the government would leave them be. But you know what we should really be doing is using those tariffs to make sure that China aligns its currency properly. Their currency is still well undervalued and protect worker rights. Because that was the stuff that will really level the playing field, and that would create a real long-term solution.
No, I'm right there with you, especially on the currency manipulation. And as Rob Scott pointed out last night, the economist from EPI, that, you know, it's misaligned. That, you know, now they've come up with different schemes to devalue the yuan and really make our products not competitive globally. His idea was to devalue our currency by a certain percent. And I got a bunch of people responding back to me going, well, what's to stop other countries from doing the same thing? And isn't that the exact same thing as a tariff? And it's an interesting question.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit of a different setup because what we really see is, okay, so their currency is undervalued, so their goods are cheaper. So yes, if their currency was worth more, their goods would be more expensive. But as you said before, that's the whole project that we're trying to undertake, is to level the playing field. And you know, if countries can keep on manipulating their currencies to make their goods cheaper, of course the playing field is not going to be level. It's the same. It's not just currency, though. I'll say it's labor rights, it's environmental protection, it's tax policy. Because when you have all these things, You know, and the Trump tax bill was one of the worst things, where they gave companies a huge break for offshoring jobs. You know, all of these things together make the playing field unlevel and keep this race to the bottom going.
Yeah, I mean, I look at some of your members who are getting screwed by this. I mean, I remember the CEO of, I think it was AT&T, who said, you know, we're going to create, you know, 7,000 jobs for every $1 billion we get. And well, I don't know if that actually happened, but the last thing I saw is you guys lost like 20 plus thousand jobs.
Yeah.
That seems to be the complete opposite of what you said.
Yep, that's exactly right. It's 23,000 jobs now just since the tax cut. At the same time, AT&T is opening a 5,000-person call center in Mexico City. Why are they doing that? Well, partly because they get a tax break, partly because they're paying workers about $2 an hour down there, right? So if you don't fix these issues, if you don't create a fair tax code and you don't make sure that you actually enforce workers' rights overseas so that they can – you know, this is hard work. You know, working in a call center is complicated. You've got people yelling at you all day. I can guarantee you that much. It's not work that's $2 an hour worth of value. You're creating much more than that in value.
Yeah.
And so they're getting underpaid, and it's only about the AT&T's bottom line, and AT&T's making a ton of money and not sharing it with its workers.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you look at these giant corporations, and I've been saying for a very long time, you know, cheap labor and lax environmental regulations, that's like the heroin for CEOs. You get them hooked on that, and you know, they'll give away the baby and the bathwater. They'll sell the furniture. They'll sell mom's wedding ring. They'll sell everything just to get access to that. And this is why, to highlight your point, why I don't really care if China steals their intellectual property.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not for it. But you know, if you're going to use your tools, what are you using your tools for? Are you going to level the playing field for American workers, or are you just doing it to give more benefits to corporations? It doesn't seem like they've got the right focus.
Yeah, but here's the thing: I keep coming back to this, and you know, I look at China, and you go, well, if you know, it's like, you know, when you were a kid, and a bully would take your lunch money. At some point, you got to say no. And if you keep giving them to, whose fault is it if you keep giving him the lunch money? I mean, we keep doing this, and we've known this for years. This isn't new. We keep losing jobs, and well, we're not losing them. We know exactly where they are. Yeah, that's my problem. Look, I'm not against losing a fight, but you got to fight.
That's exactly right. And you know, I think the thing that the problem we end up having is that Trump views our trade system as being a fight between us versus another country, when a lot of times what it is these multinational corporations, all the people with all the power, against workers in the U.S. and against workers overseas, right? It's corporations versus workers. And so if he doesn't, that's what we need. We need somebody fighting, but we need someone fighting on behalf of workers. And that's where sometimes I think that they're missing the mark.
No, you're right. I mean, this is, you know, this is the mastery that is Trump. He has taken what was a labor issue, and this is something the steel workers have been talking about for years, something that I know you guys have been talking about for years. This is not new. And he's rebranded it, slapped his name on it, and now people think that, you know, he's Magellan discovering new territory, and he's not. This is what, you know, again, what we've been talking about for years, only the focus that we had was, as you pointed out, raising labor standards for everybody doing better when everyone does better, and protecting workers across the globe, as we're, I think you're absolutely right. This is just about protecting the big multinationals at the expense of the mom and pops, who seem to overwhelmingly support him because they think they're going to somehow benefit from this as well.
Yeah, and you know, I think he's very good at throwing shiny objects in front of people and giving them the old rope-a-dope. You know, when you really look at, you know, you heard the same thing. It's a consistent theme throughout the administration about draining the swamp, and then you've got some of the most corrupt people from Wall Street and from the pharmaceutical industry are littered throughout his administration. Right? He's been very good at saying one thing and then doing another, and I'm a little bit worried that if we don't get things corrected, we could end up going down the same path in the trade policy where he'll be fighting hard, and that's good, but he'll be fighting for the wrong people, and that's where the problem lies.
So how do we move this around? Because, you know, the one thing that I do give Trump really the ultimate credit of is he defines the issue. He spins it that to where there. I mean, the abortion issue is a perfect example of him redefining the entire issue, because I've literally had sane, rational people tell me that our current abortion law allows for, you know, mothers and fathers to go to the hospital, and this, minutes before the baby's born, they can flip a coin and decide whether they're going to have an abortion or if the baby's going to be born. I've literally had people tell me this, and I'm going, are you serious? Because, well, Donald Trump said so. And it's insane, but he's done such a great job of, you know, just redefining these issues with you know, lies and obfuscation and insanity. How do we pull this back around to say, look, you know, we want to fight for fair trade. We want to make sure that American companies can compete and American workers can compete. You know, how do we turn this around? Or is it, you know, is that too complicated? Won't it fit on a bumper sticker?
Boy, I'll tell you, I don't think it's just Donald Trump. It's, he's got a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of money behind him pushing that same agenda, right, just to divide the working class. That's, you know, he's got people on Fox News and Sinclair that are pushing the same line. He's got all companies running all sorts of ads, and you got the Wall Street Journal behind him too, right? All of these people with a ton of money are pushing the same agenda. I think we're lucky in that now that Democrats have control of the House, I think they should really be able to set the agenda. And I was very glad that the first hearing on trade that they had in the Ways and Means Committee that handles trade was about trade and labor, and it was almost all the witnesses were from unions, including my boss. And we need to keep on defining that and making it clear what we stand for, because what the Democratic Party should be standing for is what it should be with workers. And that's we're not confused, right? We've been standing for the same thing for 25 years since NAFTA, right? We haven't been switching. Like you said, you said you've been doing this for a decade and a half, and I'll tell you, there's been people in the labor movement doing it for even longer. So we've got an agenda that is about a level playing field and ending the race to the bottom. And that's what our trade policy should be about. And I think if we can have a loud megaphone, we've got a lot of stars. You know, Sherrod Brown, the senator from Ohio, is definitely our best ally here. He wrote a book about the myth of free trade, and it's he didn't just come around and learn about this yesterday either. So I think we need to do is we need to, through the chances where we actually get to speak, to use our power to educate our communities, to educate our coworkers and our families about what can we do about what really needs to be done to level the playing field, which is to stop these multinational corporations from putting us against each other in a race to the bottom.
Yeah, you're right. You know, you look at all the money they're spending on this. And my grandfather always said, if a rich guy is going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. And, you know, look, the guy only had an eighth grade education, but he could even see that. It's pretty remarkable. Last question I've got for you, because, you know, I look at, you know, 2020 is around the corner. I'm concerned that I'm outside of Sanders and maybe Warren. I'm not seeing anyone really with a solid message on how we deal with our trade deals or how we deal with China. I mean, it was really concerning for me to hear Joe Biden say that China's not a problem, which I'm just, where have you been for the last 20 years? But, you know, ultimately, to me, it's going to come down to whoever the Democrats put into that office, or who move, who are nominated. They've got to deal with this trade issue, because I think this is part and parcel of why Trump won Ohio and Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania.
That's exactly right. I mean, I'll tell you, I'm not behind any one candidate yet, but what I think it's very important that Democrats have whoever the nominee is has the right message, not just on the trade issue, but on a whole host of issues. You know, we need them talking about collective bargaining rights too. You know, there's a great bill that Bobby Scott, the chairman of the House Labor Committee, has called the Protecting the Right to Organize Act that'll fix the NLRA. And we need candidates out there campaigning on that. We need candidates out there campaigning on healthcare, affordable healthcare for everyone, for cracking down on corporations that are cheating on their taxes and getting tax breaks for shipping jobs overseas. And certainly the trade issue has to be prominent among that. And so what we're trying to do at CWA, and what I hope a lot of people will be doing, is really trying to pin candidates down on issues, right? Right, not just becoming a fan club for somebody who's with us, but making sure that we hold all the candidates accountable, because if we hold them accountable, that means that'll put them in the right position to have a strong message on fair trade, to have a strong message on collective bargaining rights and all of the rest.
Yeah, I go back to, you know, President Obama, who I voted for twice, looked me in the eye two times and said they were going to pass something better than the Employee Free Choice Act. And yet here we are, still nothing. You know, for me, Sanders, the other, not too long ago at the Machinists Convention, said that he would want to repeal Taft-Hartley. To me, that's a big start.
I'm with him 100%.
Let's do that. But Dan, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the input and the thoughts on this. I'm sure this will be something that's not going away anytime soon. So we'd love to have you come back and share some more with us, if you wouldn't mind.
I would love to. Thanks so much for having me.
Good stuff, Dan. Appreciate it. Dan Maurer, legislative representative there with the Communication Workers of America, CWA. Always great to talk with our friends from there. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people from the top.